morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD 922. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, brought to you each and every morning by Hillbean Auto Body. Remember, if it happens to you, take it to Hillbean. And today we're going to have a conversation with a local actress who is starring in Margaret, the incredible Molly Brown, at the Gilded Age stage, which has taken over the Old Planters Barn Theater. We're going to talk about how that symbiotic relationship exists. But first and foremost, let's say good morning to Erin Kelly. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary. So glad to be here.
I saw you in this show Friday. I didn't know what to expect, as I never do when I go to a theater production. And I must say, I was blown away, number one, by your ability to be so natural. And just the minute you walked out on stage, it wasn't Erin Kelly anymore. It was Molly Brown.
Well, thank you. What a nice compliment.
And you engaged the audience. It's a very intimate theater. You engaged the audience and kept our attention, including my husband, and that's hard to do. Because if you're not talking about hunting or fishing or, preparing a... I think my husband most of the time was looking at the stage going, I wonder if that rocking chair needs to be fixed or tightened. Could I go up there? But, no, it was just fabulous, and I just want to thank you and encourage everyone. We're going to tell you how you can get tickets and how you can... go about doing this. But let's talk about you first and foremost. As a professional actress, this has been a horrible 18 months, I guess, with COVID shutting down most venues that people can perform at. However, some people have taken this, quote, time off to develop new projects, to relive some old projects. So tell us a little bit about how Margaret, the incredible Molly Brown, came into Erin Kelly's life.
Well, that is a story. You are absolutely right. COVID shut down professional theater across the country. The moment it was announced in March, projects, I know personally, and every friend of mine who's a professional actor, projects I had scheduled were immediately canceled. I was to work at Old Creamery Theater in Iowa and finally get to do Steel Magnolias, which I cannot believe I've never been able to do. I was so excited about that. Of course, that was canceled. I was going to assistant direct a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream with Prison Performing Arts, which is based in St. Louis, and was very excited
Anne
about
Harbrick,
that.
Anne Harbrick, one of the people involved
and
in that, a Quincy girl.
So I, you know, that was disappointing. However, I totally understood why. I mean, audiences are large groups of people inside. And so theater was one of the first things to go, and it is one of the last things to come back. And we certainly are not the only industry affected by the pandemic. Please don't get me wrong. But, some people were like, oh, you can work at home. You can't really do theater at home to make a living, you know. Some people pivoted and did some online content. Some theaters pivoted and did some online content. But, you know, I'm just old school. Life theater is life theater to me. So
it was a double whammy for a lot of actors and actresses because, let's face it, unless you are so successful that you can truly make your whole living being an actor or actress, many of them also work as waiters or waitresses.
Oh, I've done many a thing.
So that industry got hit too. So, yeah, you lose your acting profession industry. You say, well, I can always fall back on, you know, maybe office work or restaurant and tourism work. Mm-hmm. No, those were all shut down too. So, no, nobody is, there's no hierarchy of who was hurt the most.
Right.
But a lot of people could go to another form of job if their first job fell out. But in your career, people rising up in your ranks often use those same kinds of jobs to supplement when they don't have a full-time acting job.
This is true. And so, as they say, necessity breeds invention. And I have to say, the first couple of months, I was kind of treading water, trying to navigate things, as I think many people were. I had always wanted to form a company for my solo work. And one night I sat up in bed and I said, here is that opportunity. You have the time. You can focus. So I formed Gilded Age Stage, which Mark Twain coined the term Gilded Age in the late 1800s to describe America's state, which was the wealth of a few, were thinly gilding the reality of most, poverty, racial injustice, poor working conditions. And so it's my goal as I move forward to represent people from both ends of the spectrum. And I have to say, for the time being, probably for the foreseeable future, it will be focusing on my work because I need to make a living, right? But in the future, I hope to bring in other solo artists, diverse solo artists, so we really get a wide range. So when I was thinking of whom should I focus on to start with, it was a no-brainer. Margaret Tobin Brown, Hannibal's own, an incredible woman who has so much background and has so many varied accomplishments that I think a lot of people didn't know about. So I just dove right in. I dove right in as soon as I had the idea, began researching for several months, and then started writing. And I do have to say, she came out of me pretty darn quickly, I'm very happy to say.
You inhabit her very well.
Well, thank you.
She inhabits you, maybe would be the best way to say it, because you're the person that's doing the speaking now. But, of course, costuming helps, and we'll talk about that. And the stage set helps, and we'll talk about that. But the one thing, and we don't want to give the show away, but the one thing you say as Margaret Brown, Margaret Tobin, when you come out on stage, how many of you have seen the movie About My Life, The Unsinkable Molly Brown, and you say, well, forget that. And for one thing that a lot of people didn't know, nobody called her Molly until somebody decided to make a stage play and a movie about her, and then she became Molly. And why wasn't she Maggie? Why wasn't she the unsinkable Maggie Brown?
Because Molly was easier to sing. And that was, so she received that Molly moniker because that was easier to sing when they were creating that stage version, which later became the film. And as I've said before, I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. I mean, I love Debbie Reynolds. She's one of my favorites. It's a very entertaining film, but as far as representing the reality of Margaret Tobin Brown, it really misses the mark.
Yeah.
Even on the movie poster, someone posted it recently. I'm a member of this I Love Show Tunes Facebook group, and someone posted, just happenstance, that movie poster. And it says, you know, grew up in a hillbilly shack, you know, rag, you know, all this kind of thing. And she's just portrayed as this hillbilly orphan when she had a loving family. Yes, they were working class. Yes, they were poor. But they had a great work ethic. She received so much wonderful inspiration and work ethic from her parents, who are Irish immigrants. So I could go on about her all day. I just have developed a wonderful kinship with her.
You learn the real Maggie Tobin, Molly Brown, as we know her. And what's interesting about that, and I wrote it in the comment book, I don't know if you saw it, but I have relatives, they're past now, but Bud and Mary Agnes Tobin, when I was a little kid, I didn't know anything about, you know, Molly Brown. And if I did know her, it was Molly Brown. It wasn't Margaret Tobin. And my relatives are named Tobin, and they owned an ice cream shop in Hannibal, Missouri. So somewhere down the line, there has to be some kind of connection. I mean, there just has to be. I'm not into genealogy or anything like that, but how many people named Tobin could be living in Hannibal, Missouri in 1960, 1970, and not probably be related, and be Irish Catholic, and not probably be related to the Tobin family, which was quite large? And I know when PBS Illinois Stories did a special on the Molly Brown home, which is certainly not a shack. It's very modest, but it's not a shack. It wouldn't have survived to be restored if it had been a shack. They have the baptismal records of the family there. But ironically enough, there is no record for Margaret. I mean, she obviously was baptized. Her family would not have not had her baptized. But all of her brothers and sisters are there, but not Margaret. So that's kind of an interesting thing.
That is interesting. And one thing I was hoping to do, and COVID just kind of put a kibosh on a lot of things, but I had hoped to early on connect with Trish Gelber and the Molly Brown Home and Museum. It was closed during COVID. Right. I have since connected with her, and we just love talking about Margaret Tobin Brown and our mission to get her the recognition she deserves.
It'd be nice if you could pair a tour of the home with your show. I don't know which would come first, which would be better. You guys can figure that out. But I know I sat next to a couple from Texas in that theater, And I don't know if they're even aware that you can go to Motley Brown's house there in Hannibal or anything like that. So, you know, it is Motley Brown. Mark Twain is so dominant in Hannibal history mm-hmm. that Margaret Tobin Brown gets overlooked. I'm so glad to see a show in Hannibal about Hannibal's second most famous person.
Yes, and stay tuned, because Trish and I are discussing some things, and we're trying to cross-pollinate and cross-publicize each other. But one thing I had hoped to do before this play was actually on its feet was to try to meet any family members who are in Hannibal. So if you're listening and you are a descendant of Margaret Tobin Brown, I would love to talk to you at some point, and I hope that you will come see the show.
Well, I can't even help you there, because Bud and Mary Agnes have been dead for a long time, and I've lost track of their children. The last time I saw anybody in the family was at Mary Agnes's funeral, and that was a few years ago. And again, that's bad on my part. But when you're young, I love to go visit Bud and Mary Agnes. That was mm-hmm. a big trip. We'd drive in our car down to Hannibal, and we'd always have ice cream, because, of course, they own an ice cream shop.
Nice.
You know, what a wonderful place. So, anyway, the new professional theater company in Hannibal is the Gilded Age Stage. My guest today is Erin Kelly. She's the founder and, for now, the principal artist at the Gilded Age Stage. And they are putting on the show Margaret, the Incredible Molly Brown, each week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's at the Planters Barn Theater right off of Main Street. Plenty of nice parking there. $20 gets you in. You can purchase the tickets online at gildedagestage.com or just come to the box office a half hour before showtime and get your tickets. They do have a group discount, and you can inquire at the box office for that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation with Erin Kelly, the founder of Gilded Age Stage. You can see her on the boards this all the way through, I believe, September 24th. Her performance is, again, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 3 in downtown Hannibal, not at Bluff City Theater, but at the Planters Barn Theater. And we'll talk about that connection right after we come back. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. I'm Mary Griffith. This is the Mary Griffith Show. We're talking today to the actress, Erin Kelly. She has written and stars in Margaret, the Incredible Molly Brown. It is playing right now at Hannibal at Planters Barn Theater. Performances Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 3. I saw the show last Friday, and it is great. I'm not just saying that because she's sitting here.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your relationship with the Planters Barn Theater, because it is used every day pretty much for a show. By Richard Gary, who does Mark Twain. Mm-hmm. So the time that that space is not being used, you're taking use of it. And I love that synergy. Why have a building that's got a perfectly good stage sit idle when we could have more events there?
Yes, Planters Barn Theater is a wonderful space. It's very historic, as you know, built in 1849 and was originally the stable for the Planters Barn Hotel, which once sat on that big parking lot and unfortunately burned down. When I was, you know, germinating this idea, one of the first things I thought about was, where would I perform this? And Planters Barn Theater immediately came into mind because of Richard's show. Mark Twain himself, he's doing something Hannibal-centric. It's an historic building. And so I approached Richard and asked if he would be willing to consider another professional artist coming in there. It's the perfect space for a solo show. It's very intimate, which I always love for solo work. And he was totally on board and very gracious. And so it is a wonderful relationship, and I've been saying, boy, especially if you have guests in town, what better way to get a Hannibal experience than to see Margaret Tobin Brown, Molly Brown, and Mark Twain, see Molly at 3 and Mark Twain at 5. In between, you can go get a snack and do a little shopping and see these two legends. In
Dutch
a relatively
country,
short period Dutch of
country
time.
General Store will be happy to supply you with a little nosh and some candy. Yeah, it's great. Like I said, these people from Texas that were sitting next to me, they really enjoyed it. And I think they were going to the 5 o'clock show, too. So it is a nice symbiotic relationship. And the great thing about it is when you start your own company, unless you are, you know, have a space that falls into your lap, because the problem with theater is when you're not actually performing, the place sits empty and can't be used for a lot of other things because you've got your whole stage set and all your costuming and all your stuff is there. And so when you're developing a new show, you know, there's a downtime. You don't want to maybe pay rent 12 months out of the year. So having a theater space like Bluff City has 365 or Quincy Community Theater has 365 is a luxury. So Old Planners Barn Theater is a luxury for someone like you to have that already established there.
It is very nice.
And be able to piggyback on that.
Yes, it is. I was co-founder and managing artistic director of a theater company in St. Louis for 7 years, Avalon Theater Company. And we had our own space, and it was wonderful because we used it not only for performances, but our rehearsals, our costume shop was there, everything was there, and it was utilized all the time. I think when you have a theater that's mainly performance-based for solo shows, it is really a nice relationship to be able to share it, and I really do appreciate it very much.
When you put a show together like this, I noticed that the costumes were done by Quincy's own Susan Schultz, who many people who go to theater productions will recognize Susan's name. She also is part of Golden Bridges, and when they move people, she helps redecorate their homes, taking their old items and putting them in beloved new places in their new home. She's very artsy, as we like to say. Your costume, I thought, was pretty incredible. And again, the Molly Brown story, she wasn't born in abject poverty, but she did work in a cigar factory, and she had to work very hard. And when she found a chance to go out west, you know, she took it and happened to kind of strike it rich, and kind of the rest is history. She was always, from that point on, kind of a more wealthy woman. So her costuming, the costume you portray her in, is very much Gilded Age costuming. It's very lovely, very the kind of nice finery that she wore once she became of a certain class. Although, as is today's problem in society, if you're not to a manner born, are you really part of the upper echelon? And she ran into a little of those problems. And you mentioned she was friends with the Astor family in the show. And, of course, the new Astor wife was not appropriate in many people's expectations. So that's probably why they became good friends, because they had the money to fit in. But did they have the breeding, darling?
You know, that is true. But I had a discussion with someone recently that the wonderful thing about Margaret Tobin Brown is, first of all, the portrayal that we've seen made her seem like she was a total social outcast, that she was too much of a, quote, hillbilly,
right,
whatever, to fit in. No, the opposite was true. She fit in with everyone, and that was the wonderful thing about her. Because of her humble beginnings, she was able to communicate with people from that class and that genre, but she fit very well into Denver society. As I mentioned, she was not a member of the Sacred 36, which was a group of Denver elite, but she certainly was very involved with the elite and totally accepted by these families as the Astors. So as I was discussing with this gentleman, yes, she did raise money for a lot of causes. And when you're asking for money, it's really about the relationship. Yes, the cause is important, but people tend to give based on relationships. She was able to cultivate relationships with people of all walks of life, and that's why she was able to really move through those different classes so easily. And she walked the walk. I mean, if people needed her help, as I don't want to give the whole show away, she would go to the site of these tragedies, and it wasn't just as she would write a check from New York City and put it in the mail. She would go and be on the ground floor and use her physical strength to help people.
Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that carried back to her kind of coming up and the way she was raised in Hannibal. Very interesting. So how much does the costuming help you embody her? Because obviously I sit across from you, I look at you now, it's the same face, but it's not anything like what I saw on Friday. How important is the set and the costume to an actress?
It is important. I don't think it's the most important. I think what you bring to the person, their essence, and when you're portraying someone that is no longer alive and there isn't footage of them, there isn't, you know, a contemporary person, you can do a lot of research and watch their interactions online and try to get a sense of their physicality and all of this. I really built that from the existing pictures. Also, she used that walking stick. She loved her walking stick. It wasn't used because of a physical need. It was something she just loved, and she would decorate it for various holidays and events. The set, I have to, someone really commented on the set how wonderful it was. I cannot take credit for it. That is Richard Gary's set that he uses for Mark Twain himself, which he is graciously sharing with me. That space is small. There is no wing space, fly space. So our shows are close together. So it's quite impossible to do a total shift of set and everything.
I had a feeling, yes, very much so, that was a shared set.
Yeah.
However, you have made it your own with a few little flourishes, and that's all that counts.
Well, thank you. That's what we decided would work. I add a few special touches that are easily removed for his show. He has a few special touches he uses that I remove for my show.
Don't drink all of his brandy, because that would be bad. Molly, don't empty the brandy
jar.
Well,
that actually is my sherry bottle.
Oh, okay.
That is my little bottle there, I have to admit. And she wasn't a big drinker, but that is an actual quote of hers. A nip of sherry is good for the character. And so I had to work that in. I had to work it in. As far as the costuming, yes, that often helps, because especially in a period piece, we're so used to wearing our contemporary clothing, like I'm wearing now, you know, my nicer t-shirt and khaki pants. You know, it was a whole different feel. They, especially women, had to dress in layers. How they did it, I don't know. You know, the hat, the glove, all of that. And that really does make you feel, it makes you sit a different way. It makes you walk a different way. Susan Schultz is amazing. I formed a bond with her when she happened to come see the shows I did at Bluff City Theater, and we just became friends. And when I was working on this project, I thought it's a no-brainer. I have to ask Susan to help me. So that costume was a part of Quincy Community Theater's stock at one time. It is a vintage costume, and I just adore it. It's also orange, which is unusual. And Molly did, I'm going to call her Molly here, she did have a unique sense of style. She could be very glamorous, but she just loved to zhuzh everything up. I mean, there are all these accounts of these headpieces she wore, and I mean,
she's kind of Dolly Parton-ish in the sense that,
yes,
yeah, she liked to be the bedazzled look.
She did.
Yeah.
And so I really love, especially that coat just makes it for me.
It does. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Erin Kelly is my guest today. She's the artistic director of Gilded Age Stage. She moved to Hannibal in 2019 from the Tulsa, Oklahoma area. She is a member of the Cherokee Nation and a direct descendant of Tecumseh, but there's a lot of Irish in you somewhere, because you got red hair and freckles. So somewhere along the line, somebody stepped out. We won't go there. She does a lot of solo work, and she has brought her solo talents to Hannibal, Missouri, to the Old Planner's Barn Theater, which is right there on Main Street. And you can see her act every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 3 at the Old Planner's Barn Theater. It's $20 for a ticket. The show is just about an hour long. It is a one-woman show, and she captivates and keeps your attention. This show is scheduled to run through September 24th. Are you anticipating extending run if successful, or are you on to another project?
I'm going to keep open on that front right now. One thing I've always planned with Gilded Age Stage is that the shows will be available to travel and go to groups, organizations, even out of state. So I'm, now that I've opened the show at Planter's Barn, I'm focusing on those efforts. And you mentioned Tulsa. I'm originally from Tulsa, but I grew up in southern Illinois. in Nashville, Illinois, a big population of 3,000 people when I lived there, one flashing red light. And I actually moved to Hannibal directly from New York City, which people kind of wonder at. But as a professional actor, you tend to go where the work is. So I was in New York City in 2018, and my mother unexpectedly passed, and I have a son in St. Louis I really missed. And so I decided to move back to the Midwest. Instead of moving back to St. Louis, where I had lived for many years at one time, I decided to give Hannibal a whirl.
And was it Bluff City Theater that helped you come to Hannibal?
Well, because of Bluff City, I spent some extended period of time here. You know, as a kid growing up in Southern Illinois, my family would take us to Hannibal every several years to see all the Mark Twain attractions, but I had never spent more than a day in Hannibal. But coming to Bluff City to rehearse and perform, I was here twice, maybe 5 to 6 weeks each time, and really fell in love with the community. It's a beautiful city. The arts community really surprised me for the size of the community, how strong it is in all disciplines, be it music, visual art, whatever. And I just thought, this is for me. I really love being a part of a community, coming from a small town originally. So it's just been a really good base for me. And as theaters open up across the country, I may travel elsewhere to do theater, not just solo work. I still am auditioning virtually.
Are you going to be doing Steel Magnolias, or is that chance gone?
That chance, I think, is gone. And the funny thing is, I was hired to do Truvy, and I think by the time I get the chance to do it again, it's going to be Weezer or Clary, but bring it on, because I love those roles. So there's still hope for me.
You are of a certain age. You're very good looking, but there will come a time when even you can't be Juliet, Erin Kelly.
All that time, that ship has sailed.
We said, Mark Drummond and I used to say we would be Romeo and Juliet, and would be, oh, cataract. Oh, cataract and knee replacement would be our family name or something like that. The Gilded Age. Molly Brown was part of that, folks. There was an awful lot of incredible wealth in very, very, very few people's hands. And she, being a woman, never could fully access all the power that that money could have brought her, but she did the best she could to ramrod a few projects home with the mining industry and to improve working conditions for the poor and to help those who needed help with charitable causes. She was never called Molly Brown, but that's okay. We're stuck with that, thanks to the media. Thanks to the media. Margaret, the incredible Molly Brown, written and performed by Erin Kelly every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday afternoon at 3 at Planters Barn Theater, right on Main Street next to the Dutch Country General Store. If you can find Dutch Country and their good stuff, you can find the Planters Barn Theater. Delightful. Break a leg. Hope
Thank
that
you.
You have a continued run, or that you get to take this wonderful show all over the United States, because young women everywhere need to hear the story about how, yes, sometimes we're boxed in, mm-hmm. but you can break out of that box little by little if you really exert yourself and what you've got going for you. Thanks for joining me today. We'll be back again to do it all another day on The Mary Griffith Show.
Thank you.